Chapter 5. Horace's gold-green irises were reduced to a thin band encircling his wide pupils, and the louder the pounding feet got, the more color seemed to drain from his face. There were only a few instances where I'd seen Horace truly bothered or worried about something, and this was one of those times, so the hair on the back of my neck stood up even straighter. This howl was the closest one yet, and it had the desired effect of stirring cowards from their hiding places. One coward, actually. Lieutenant Villy yelped like he'd just pissed himself, and then he went crashing through the forest off to my right. Without putting too much thought into it, I threw my right blade, decisive, directly where I knew he would be, and I reveled in the satisfying sound of his bulky body hitting the packed dirt in the darkness. At least now the two-faced fuck wouldn't go running back to the mining town's captain with whatever bullshit and half-truths he was likely to tell. One problem down, one more to go. And by one more, I meant the gang of wolfmen currently encircling my crew with feral expressions in their yellow eyes. Their sharp teeth gleamed in the remaining torchlights that hadn't gone out yet, and the growls from all of them created a loud and dissonant din that filled the air.
"You have made a grave error,"
a harsh voice barked out, but the wolfmen were constantly marching around us in two concentric circles that would switch directions every so often, so I couldn't pinpoint the speaker.
"I know you have come for the spirit fire kindling. Your greed and ignorance will cost all of you your lives."
"No, wait," I shouted. "I admit we knew there was something valuable here, but you are right. I was ignorant. When we realized what the trees were, we wanted to leave, but we weren't able to."
"How can we believe you when the company you keep is with that scoundrel, Lieutenant Villy?"
the voice asked with a high degree of skepticism.
"He has been here time and time again to poach from this enchanted forest, and always leaves tragedy in his wake."
"Trust me, he is not company I will miss," I muttered.
"Explain,"
one of the other circling wolfmen demanded, and I could tell I'd piqued their interest. "That bastard was supposed to be our guide," I explained. "He never told us about how this forest is sacred. We didn't figure it out until later." Finally, the circling ceased, and the imposing figures of 7-foot-tall wolfmen stood shoulder to shoulder. This had the effect of trapping us all in the center of their ring like we were being interrogated. They were similar to the wolfmen Zoe and I encountered when we raided the ruins of the Northern Cliff Kingdom. Both types stood on two legs like a man, and both had elongated torsos and long arms. Their chests were covered in a thick pelt of fur, and their heads were wolf-shaped. However, when I looked closer, I could see these wolfmen not only had fur, but patterns of mirrored scales shooting through their pelts in interesting patterns, which allowed them to blend into the variable landscapes this island had to offer. There was no mistaking it. These were Terran-born wolf people.
"What do you mean this forest is sacred?"
Thass asked, like he couldn't help himself, even though it looked like we were one false move away from getting shredded apart.
"I grew up in Montown. A lot of ghost stories were told when I was a child, but no one ever said it was sacred."
"Every island in Avonthal has a magical forest that sings once every season for the whole day,"
Shay said.
"Have you ever noticed the singing?"
"I have," Thass said. "But it is very faint these days. When I asked the elders about this, they wouldn't answer me, and I knew asking about it was a sad thing, so I have not asked since."
"This forest used to be filled with people who made the ultimate sacrifice for their children. And their children's children,"
Zoe said, and one of the wolfmen stepped forward.
"The blessing of Mid-Crescent,"
he said, and nodded his large gray head.
"Mid-Crescent?" Thass scowled. "But that's an uppish holiday."
"No, lad," the wolf snapped. "It is an Avonthal holiday, just like Brea's night. One your people have forgotten due to their silly class differences."
The large tattooed man looked down at his feet and then stepped back like he was properly chastised.
"Sorry," he mumbled.
The gray wolf man, who had obviously singled himself out as the leader of sorts, gave a curt nod, and then he trained his limp yellow gaze on me.
"You do not belong here," he said. "None of you do. The Terrans have grown mistrustful of the other races over the last age. Therefore, they would never let outsiders in. And even if you did sneak in, there is little chance you would have made it past Snake Tree Village. We must assume you are spirits who mean this island harm."
"No, wait!" I went to hold up my hands, but one still held onto my remaining blade. So midway I switched and set it down on the ground at my feet. "We did not break in. We're not spirits, nor do we want to cause harm. We were invited. Honestly, I'm an ambassador from Nada Isle."
"It is true."
Siskern stepped in with a regal lilt of his head.
"I am the regent for Upper Tear. I can confirm he is here under my invitation."
The gray wolf man regarded us with an unreadable expression.
"There is something else," he said,
and his gaze lighted on each and every one of us before they slid back over to Horus with realization.
"You have the stink of a mercenary. It's old, but it's all over you."
It was as if these growled words were the cue for all hell to break loose, and amidst barking and braying, two of the wolfmen apprehended Horus.
"Horus!"
Shay screamed, as he was dragged away from her side.
"The rest of you may leave, but he must stay and answer for his crimes,"
the gray wolf said, and completely ignored Shay's angry jabbering.
"We're not leaving without our friends, sir,"
I insisted in a loud but firm voice that rose above all the chaos and caused everything to stand still once more.
"You must, or we will kill you, like we will kill him and not be worried for our souls," the wolf leader said. "You choose."
"Stop! There is very good explanation for all of this,"
Horus interrupted.
"Then explain in one word or less," the wolf man challenged. "After all, there is only one word that might absolve you of your crimes. And there is no way someone as disgraceful as you would have been told. You Ashers are all the same with your entitled thinking."
"What if I told you I do know?"
The Falcon Man stared point blank into the face of the leader.
"Impossible," he snarled.
"Even if you do, for you to say it would be
one fang,"
Horus said, and the oxygen suddenly felt as if it was completely sucked out of the immediate vicinity. There was an ancient power behind this apparently forbidden word, and I could practically feel it prickle all over my skin like the bristles of a wire brush. So, the fact that Horus obviously violated some old magic thing and then coughed up a huge wad of blood should have been unsurprising, but it wasn't.
"Horus!"
Shay yelled, and caught her brother under one of his arms while I attempted to do the same.
"Fuck, Chief!"
the Falcon Man croaked out, as strings of blood and bile streaked from the corners of his mouth.
"What's happening to him?"
I demanded of the wolfmen, as I kept my best friend from face-planting as best I could.
"What did you do?"
"We did nothing,"
the wolf leader said in his usual placid tone. But there was something on his stony face that broke around the eyes. Like he and all of his buddies were somehow sad things ended up the way they did.
"Bullshit! Look at him!"
I shouted, as Shay and I lowered the flagging Horus to the ground.
"He voluntarily broke the bond of silence," the leader said. "The penalty of saying our High Chief's name is death. These are the parameters."
"He can't die! He's my brother!"
Shay argued. But the wolfmen couldn't or wouldn't do anything. So my phoenix wife did what she normally did, and took matters into her own capable hands.
"Help me lay him down fully, Alex."
I ignored the bastards watching me, and focused in so I could be the best assistant she ever had. And I tried to help my best friend get comfortable, even though it looked like he was choking on his own blood. Which was probably the least comfortable a person could be. But I shucked off my cloak and balled it up under the Falcon Man's head while Shay undid the buttons on his shirt so he was less restricted.
"You can do it,"
I encouraged under my breath when she pressed both her hands down on Horus's chest. With a deep breath, the Phoenix Woman closed her eyes and concentrated. The twin rivers of her tears started to flow, and a soft white glow limned her fingers where she touched her brother's bare skin. I held my breath when she frowned harder, and a few tears floated off her cheeks to swirl in the air. Shay had only ever managed this feat with her tears once before, when all of us were navigating through the dark caves on our journey to Terre. Amaya had a hard time with processing Siskorn's dying tears, and then being in such darkness was even worse. So Shay swooped in with her healing powers and eased the Augur woman's fractious mind. It seemed as if she was having a similar effect with Horus now. His breathing didn't seem as harsh in his lungs, but the blood continued to burble up at the corners of his mouth.
Ani!
He wheezed and went to hold out a hand toward the Ibex woman, but he was stopped in his tracks with another death-rattle-sounding hack.
Horus,
Anwar said in the smallest voice I'd ever heard from her as she stood frozen in shock with her wide opal eyes.
It's not working,
Shay said as more tears fell down her cheeks like diamonds. These were just regular tears of frustration, however, and they fell heavily off her lashes one at a time, like the dew before an autumn chill.
Why isn't it working?
You do not have the discipline to harness all of the power of the incarnate, little one.
One of the other wolves, a smaller white one who struck me as being female, stepped out of rank and came closer to where Shay and I were bracketing a dying Horus. Because that's what was happening. It was obvious. He was really dying, and not painlessly if the groans and gasps were anything to go by.
You know about the incarnate? I questioned.
And then I wrapped my arm around my phoenix wife's shoulders when the white wolf woman knelt down.
The first incarnate was born when the moon tribes were first created.
She explained as she rummaged inside her dark cloak for a small drawstring pouch. From inside, she pulled out something bright pink, slimy, and moss-like, and then she popped it inside Horus's mouth. He immediately turned an interesting shade of green on top of his deathly pale and tried to spit the thing out.
No,
the wolf woman said, and kept Horus's lips closed.
Keep that in. It'll stop the hemorrhaging until we can get you back to our camp.
You're taking him?
Shay queried as her lower lip trembled.
You can save him?
No, we cannot,
she said, and I tightened my arm around her when Shay inhaled sharply.
But you might be able to.
What do you mean?
Shay asked as more tears streamed down her face.
All we can do is slow the inevitable to give you some time to learn from us on how to hone your gift,
the wolf woman said.
But you also must come with us, and you must do so now, before it's too late.
The shock of this washed through all of us like a bucket of ice water, and Shay's mouth popped open into a little O of surprise.
Me?
She whispered, and then brushed the hair out of her brother's eyes.
Yes, but you must come alone, and you must hurry,
the wolf woman said. Wait, why the sudden change of heart? I asked, and put my hand on Shay's wrist to prevent her from standing up.
I want to save Horus, too, but where are they taking you? Why can't we come? And are we sure this isn't just another trap? You all were pretty gung-ho on killing all of us a few minutes ago.
I agree, Siskern said, as his hand drifted toward the coiled whip on his belt.
No! Please!
Horus coughed out.
Shh!
Shay soothed and placed her fingers on his bloody lips. Siskern and I shared a look. I could tell he wanted to arm himself just as much as I did. But listening to Horus try to talk us out of hurting these people as if they were important while he was still choking on his own blood made all of us pause.
The Wolfkin do not share their names with just anyone, the Grey Wolf Chief said.
And he removed his cloak so he could wrap it around Horus, who started to shiver violently.
Only to those who have gained the trust of the one who gives it. One Fang of Nata has recognized this man as kin, and has trusted that he would only reveal his name to those he trusts if he needed to.
But he trusts us,
Shay said.
Yes, but he did not trust us at the time,
the wolf chief said as he gestured to the rest of the wolfkin.
He knew it was the only way we would believe him, even though it would cost him his life.
He didn't even hesitate.
Thass commented in awe as he gazed down at the Falcon Man. That's the kind of guy Horus is, I responded, and winced when he coughed painfully.
"This is why we wish to help him now,"
the wolf woman said, and she gazed down at the dying man with something akin to regret.
"We have grown into a hard race, a suspicious race. We knew what the penalty was for getting someone to break the bond of silence, and yet we goaded him into breaking it. We did not think he would prove us wrong."
"Well, he did,"
Shay said, as fury made her words barbed.
"How could you?"
"We wolfkin have had a long and sordid past with mercenary clans on this island," the chief explained. "It is clear he'd run with Rotnam, who is our sworn enemy."
"Horace had no choice but to join Rotnam and his barbarians,"
Shay said.
"But once he was in, he tried to do everything in his power to leave. He wouldn't speak of how Rotnam ran the clan, but there were stories about how they would treat children."
"Yes," the wolf chief growled. "They are some of the most foul, and we strove to eradicate them from this isle long ago. But we couldn't stamp them out completely. They have stayed away from Tear for many cycles, but their cancerous bloodline pollutes the rest of Avantol to this day. Seeing your friend and smelling the faded reek of Rotnam's evil still lingering on him made him an instant enemy to my people. It is my folly I did not consider otherwise."
"I understand," I said, as some of my ire dissipated, and I turned to look at Shay. "What do you want to do?"
"I..."
Shay searched my eyes with her distressed green ones.
"They said they could train me with the incarnate power."
"I know it's something you've wanted to understand," I said, and squeezed her hand, even though my heart seemed to be cramping in my chest at what the clear decision was. "You have to."
"But I don't want to leave you,"
she sobbed, and then turned to Zoe and the mech sisters.
"Any of you!"
"You must," I said, and gave her a smile. "You'll just have to hurry up and become a badass so you can come back to us. Both of you."
"Oh, I will."
Shay threw herself into my arms, and I held her even though she was shaking like a leaf. Over her shoulder, I locked eyes with the wolf chief as he hauled Horace up into his large arms. "When will I see them again?" I asked the chief, as I brought us back to our feet with my wife still wrapped tightly in my arms.
"Come back through this valley in a few days' time."
He tilted Horace toward the white wolf woman, who put a strip of something dark green like seaweed over his throat. My best friend groaned and then went deathly still.
"They will both be waiting for you."
Shay broke away from me so she could grasp my hands.
"I can do this."
"You can do this," I said evenly, even though I could feel my chin tremble.
"Can I?"
Amaya left Anwar's side and took a tentative step toward us, and Shay and I instantly brought her into the fold.
"Zoe, you as well. Hopefully I can do something that will ease this heartache."
When the four of us were embracing each other as fully as we could, Amaya's touch swept through all of our points of contact like an electric current through a closed circuit. With a brief shift in focus, all of us could feel how the Augur woman narrowed her attention on Shay. After a beat, the impressions coming through our combined connection all came from the Phoenix woman. Amaya's touch was always an abstracted version of feelings and sensations that took a while to define with actual words. So it took a moment to understand the sensation of a rushing river against my skin with Shay's excitement and anticipation, but the icy coldness was also her fear. Then the sensations changed too rapidly for me to keep up with, until the roulette wheel halted on a feeling that reminded me of something profoundly lonely, like a lamp left on in an abandoned house, or a forgotten candle left to slowly disappear the longer it burned without purpose. I gasped slightly from the pain of it, and when I met Shaylia's beautiful gemstone eyes, I suddenly understood the real fear under the rushing river water. She was afraid of this thing inside of her, afraid of the deep ancientness of the power she simultaneously felt both brimming with and bereft of. But the biggest fear of all was being forced to stand by helplessly when there was something she could have possibly done, especially if it meant saving the people she loved. The longing she felt to truly understand this new facet about herself was also telegraphed through our connection, and it was clear this was long overdue. As if by mutual silent agreement, we broke apart our group hug until it was just Shay and I holding on to each other's hands.
"I can do this,"
she said, and this time, the uncertain tremor that had colored her voice before was now absent. "I know you can," I repeated. And instead of a cold cramp of regret, a warm and settled feeling took up residence inside my chest cavity. Then I leaned forward, pressed my lips against her forehead, and closed my eyes as I inhaled the spicy scent of her I loved so much.
"I will come back to you,"
she said, and she kissed me deeply one last time, before she pulled away and took her place next to the wolf chief, who still had Horus in his arms. With one last nod at the wolf chief and his pack, my remaining crew and I watched as they disappeared into the trees. I didn't blink until the bright flame of Shay's hair was well and truly out of sight, and even then I felt like I couldn't tear my eyes away from the line of dark trees.
"Ambassador!"
Thassa's voice, combined with Zoe squeezing my hand, jolted me out of my daze. I cleared my throat and gave my wife a smile.
"What's up, Thass?"
"I have a question," he started,
and I walked over to where he was by the bushes and saw he was frowning down at a corpse with one of my herald blades sticking out between its shoulder blades.
"How did you know Vili was treacherous?"
There was some instinct involved, but to be honest, I think the sword helped me make that decision, I said, as I pulled said sword out of what used to be Vili. Then I cleaned the blade and looked down at the combined orange and green stone glittering up at me. The power beneath decisiveness hummed, and I mentally thanked Horus once more for fashioning me these weapons despite the danger it posed to him. Just another reason why it was so important he came back.
"Whatever the case, you were on the right course,"
Thass said, and crouched down to pull something off the dead man's neck with a snap. When he held it up, I scowled at the familiar metallic object dangling from a tarnished chain.
"Leader Zaire told us about these medallions."
"What has he told you?" I asked, as I put my sword away. Thass continued to stare at the object without speaking for a beat before he shook his head like he was snapping himself out of a trance. With a disgusted scoff, he threw the medallion in the mud at his feet and then scooped it up along with some of the dark clay.
"Only that this scat is pure evil," he said,
as he formed a ball around the medallion to hide its tempting gleam from sight.
"Terran ore already makes us eventually go mad. But Zaire says it's likely there is someone who has found a way to manipulate it so it has the ability to curse all sentient life."
"Do you think Vili was being mind-controlled?" I asked. And I remembered the horror of Nemus's crew when they jumped to their deaths like zombies.
"Is that something you've seen before?"
Thass's eyes grew wide, and I realized apparently the mind control thing was news to him. Instead of answering, I just took the lump of clay from him, wrapped it up in a small leather cloth for good measure, and stashed it away. Fuck. This shiny shit kept popping up around every corner, it seemed like, and it was really starting to piss me off. So I vowed then and there I wouldn't leave this island until I found a way to get rid of it once and for all.
"Everyone ready?"
I gruffed out, because I was just irritated at the whole thing. But I softened my tone when I saw Amaya holding Anwar's hand as she stood there like a statue. The Ibex woman clenched her jaw as she stared down at the ground, and because of her downcast gaze, her normally regal and stoic posture now appeared wooden and brittle, like she would break apart if she looked up from the spot where Horus's prone body had lain.
"Anna,"
Amaya whispered as she continued to stroke and squeeze her hand.
"He'll be okay. Horus is coming back."
"I know,"
she said in a flat voice.
"I am ready."
I wanted to say something, but everything I thought of sounded lame, even in my head. So I decided that action was better anyway. If she was anything like me, she probably wanted the distraction as much as I did. "Let's go," I said, "and let us back the way we came, until we were once again at the base of the mountain." After a while of silent hiking through the valley, Siskern came up beside me.
My brother would often speak to me about the types of sacrifices required of a true leader, and it is only now when I finally see what he was trying to tell me.
It's not something I ever really wanted to be, I confessed. To be honest, the responsibility of it all terrifies me more often than not. But I'm also starting to see I couldn't be anything else. Like, coming here changed me somehow.
If that is the case, I am glad for it, the raptor man said, and hearing the respect in his voice eased another part of me that felt bereft without the avian siblings by my side. I knew if I had to pick a second, it would be Siskern.
How much farther until we're there? I asked Thass over my shoulder.
Not too far, he said. It should just be...
The man cut himself off so abruptly I slowed us to a halt. Thass? I questioned. And then I turned to look at where he was pointing.
Smoke,
he said. And because everything in Lower Tear had a dark backdrop, I had to squint in order to see the black plume of smoke rising from over the ridge. And then the screams could be heard.